हरि ॐ सहना भवतु सहना भुनक्तु सह वीर्यंकर वावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
It's not that they realize that's their inclination, because we see is they haven't gotten to the level of who they specifically are. Does that make sense? It's a matter of there's that inclination. That's the kind of service that they find attractive.
So when like, they tell the guru that, you know, now they're seeing him
and Subha.
Yeah, and Subha. So, like Raghunandas Goswami will also have a spiritual identity.
Yes.
So how does this, like he's acting as, you know, for them Subha and...
As representative. Just like the spiritual master is representative of God. So all he's bringing out now is now they see him as more as representing the devotee. You understand? So they're representing Krishna, but in that particular line, then they're representing that particular devotee, because that's the head of that line. You know what I'm saying? Or that's the head of who they're working with, like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So I'm just saying all these things can be there at once. The spiritual masters representing the particular line and representing Krishna. Does that make sense? So it goes back, is then Lalita's, I mean, Radharani, the line coming down there will be conjugal, and the one from Balaram will be the servitorship, friendship, and parental. Those three will be there. You know what I'm saying? And then depending on who it is, then there's a head of that. Does that make sense? So now there's the head of the Haladini and the head of the Chit. And then within that, then you have the different groups. All right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, bottom 12. The natural function of bhava is to independently reveal the transcendental form, identity, and pastimes of Sri Krishna. Bhava appears to be an emotion, a part of the human psyche, which it is not, and it is apparently caused by a catalyst external to itself. However, bhava, or rati, constitutionally is a transcendental subject of relishment bestowed upon the jiva and mercifully establishes the souls imprisoned in the material world to relish the nectarian spiritual qualities of Krishna and his transcendental pastimes. Because right? If we think that bhava is not independent, then we will think that we're generating bhava. Right? Does that make sense? That's the difficulty. Because then it's because of my service, I'm generating this bhava. No, bhava is separate. So bhava is there. It is bestowed upon the living entity so the living entity can appreciate the name, form, qualities, pastimes, and the taste of that with Krishna. Right? So it's always important to know bhakti is independent. Right? It's, in other words, bhakti is not the jiva. Bhakti becomes imbued. I mean, the jiva becomes imbued with bhakti. Right? That's what I'm saying. Vrajanath, are there different varieties of bhava? Raghunath Das Babaji. Yes, according to their different sources, there are two varieties of bhava originating from Sri Krishna and his pure devotees. Sadhana Abhivesha Jabhava. Bhava arising through sadhana, and prasadaja bhava, bhava arising through mercy. But it means both of them are mercy, but one of them is simply the mood is that by one's getting it, and the other one is you're applying yourself very nicely to the sadhana, you know, in a sincere way, and that way you please the person. Technically, both are prasad, but one is showing through regulation, and one is showing just that sincere, just the effort. Bhava simply implies the former. The latter is extremely rare. Right? So most are sadhana siddha. Right? By performing your sadhana, you're fixed in your chanting, absorption, taste, attachment like this. Then, you know, that's generally why it's given. So he's saying, yes.
Can you give any example? Some devotees got this prasad bhava.
There's some examples coming.
It's coming.
Oh,
he's going to ask. Okay. So when he says bhava, it means sadhana, because you're doing sadhana bhakti and then you come to bhava, right? So just by nature, when you say bhava, you mean sadhana bhakti jabhava. Sadhana abhinivesha jabhava is of two kinds, corresponding to the two paths of sadhana bhakti, vaidhi and raganuga. Initially, bhava generates ruchi in the heart of the devotee, right? Because remember, before it was that ruchi and asakti are preliminary states to bhava, right? Bhava is preliminary to prema, you know, but it's still that element. Bhava, as has been mentioned, is that state by which Krishna's name, form, qualities, and pastimes is revealed, right? So then there's preliminary to that. So there's that fuller manifestation where it's ecstasy, and then where it's just a little bit, so you get a taste or attachment. When it's more intense, then it generates ecstasy. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Right? And then that reveals that, then you fall in love with Krishna. Does that make sense? Because you're so attracted and attached, and that too, his name, form, qualities, and attachment, you develop that love. Does that make sense? So bhava generates ruchi in the heart of the devotee. Later, asakti, attachment to the Lord. And finally, rati, love. The scriptures and Vedic science of the performing arts treat bhava and rati as synonymous, and so will I. Right? Because they're taking it as that, because you're taking the element of that feeling towards Krishna, which is love. And then the resultant response of that, of ecstasy. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So they're both the same. So he's saying the scriptures have treated it like that. And so therefore, I will also treat it the same. Right? So when you're talking about it, because otherwise sometimes you may refer, oh, does it mean this or means that? Because some words that we have, they'll be described in one way, and they're describing one aspect, and another way, another aspect, and we become confused and think they're two different things. Right, but they're actually the same, right? Just different aspects of the same. So the one is the element that's revealing and therefore creating the ecstasy. The other one is that development of love because of that that revelation and that ecstasy. Does that make sense? Yeah. In Vaidhi Bhakti, bhava is in an unmanifest state known as shraddha. First, shraddha matures and becomes nishta, steadfastness, which produces ruchi, taste. In Raganuga Bhakti, however, bhava generates ruchi right from the beginning. See, water in here. As you move, it goes, makes noise. Okay, so, what did you say? Unmanifest state. In other words, when bhava is not manifest, you just have the shraddha. When shraddha matures, then you get, nishta, which then means you become fixed, right? Because not being fixed means it's not mature, because your shraddha is in Krishna, but also there's still some in the material world, right? So the nishta means that shraddha is fixed in Krishna, right? That's where the shraddha is. That doesn't mean that there might not be some previous habit or a comfortableness in dealing with the conditioning. Does that make sense? Right? Means one has one's nature. Like Arjuna, the form is that of a Kshatriya. So he's comfortable to do the Kshatriya duties. Right? So you may see that in the amongst the what do you call it? The Madhyama. Right? So, but it's mature there. And then that produces taste. Because when you're fixed in devotional service, then there's nothing else to distract. So there's no separate taste. Right? So then the taste develops. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So in the beginning of ruchi, it means nishta. Because each one of those, Vishwanath divides each one of those into three. Because you can have, means you have the neophyte stage, which is from shraddha through anartha nivritti. So that will be considered kanista, right? Then your madhyama will be your nishta, ruchi, and asakti. And then your uttama will be your bhava and prema, right? And then what's beyond that, right? So each has those three levels. Then you're going to have, within each of those, you're going to have the kanista, kanista, madhya, kanista, uttam, kanista, right? So just on shraddha and asakti, I mean, shraddha and sadhusanga, that will be your kanishta kanishta, right? When he takes up bhajana kriya, that will be your madhyama. When he actually becomes serious about removing the anarthas, then that becomes the uttama, right? Then nishta is the neophyte or the kanishta of the madhyam. Ruchi is the madhyam, asakti is uttam madhyam. Does that make sense? Right? Your bhava would be your how you say? Your kanista uttam, prema would be your madhyam uttam, and beyond prema would be your uttam uttam. Right? Does that make sense? So now you can take within each of these also. So within nishta, whereas just the anarthas are over, but there's still some habit and some other things, then it will be the neophyte aspect of nishta. Right? Then when it's solidly fixed, but then when it starts developing that taste, but it's still just a fixedness, right? Then that'll be the uttam, right? Then that'll go farther where it'll begin the beginning of taste. Occasionally that taste is there, it's strong. That's what's the interest, right? The other is, I'm fixed in devotional service and you're getting a taste. But the other is, the taste is the thing, not being fixed. Then that will become more solid and then it will start developing attachment. You understand? So there's always that overlap. Mm. All
right.
Yes.
As I understand it, we will develop Raganuga when we reach the stage of bhava.
Means you develop, means you can develop, that's the natural state where it's, you can say it's fully manifest.
Yeah.
Right? Mm. But it's not that it doesn't start before that.
Mm. But so,
you understand? So yeah. From nishta, Raganuga can start seriously.
Mm.
Like that. So if there is any element of it, means there's naturally some of it before. Right. Otherwise, why is, you have a taste for the kirtan or being with the devotees of the festival? That's why you do it. But it's only momentarily tasted, and then the rest of the day you're absorbed in other things.
Mm.
Right? You know, it's like the festival. That was a great festival. Now you know, got to go home to lunch, and then you know, oh man, is that what rained? I wonder if they got this and that, and then you know, it just goes. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It just seems funny that it says in Raganuga Bhakti, however, bhava generates ruchi right from the beginning.
No, because what you're dealing, see, because you go back to that previous paragraph. The natural function of bhava is to independently reveal the transcendental form, identity, and pastimes of Krishna. So that's happening from the beginning of devotional service. Right? Because before that, in Bhakti Sukriti, there's no revelation of the name, form, qualities, and pastimes. You're getting the piety where there's an interest in that kind of devotional environment, you know, with devotees or what they do. You understand? You know, it's an interesting, it's nice. You know, you go by, the kirtan party goes by, or the Rath Yatra goes by, and the person thinks, oh, that's nice, that's interesting. That's his piety. Now, if he thinks, what is this stupidness? Okay, then he doesn't get. Right? But if he thinks this is nice, or you know, he takes it some notice of, or goes and, you know, sees what they're doing, or gets some prasad, or, you know, devotees talk to him and goes, this sounds logical. Yeah, no, I can relate to that. But he hasn't developed that faith. So no name, form, qualities, and pastimes are revealed at that time. But as soon as he gets shraddha, right, that's where then bhava starts to reveal. But it's only called bhava as such, as a state of existence. when you come to that platform, when you're on the Brahma-Bhuta platform. So then it's fully manifest, so you call it bhava. But if there's a little bit of that, you know, just like, let's say like this. The father, he has, you know, a, you know, multinational, you know, billion-dollar business, okay? So now, you know, his son turns 16, right? And for his birthday, he gets a car, right? His car is a limo, right? And, you know, he's got a little pocket money, you know, a few thousand bucks a month, right? But, comparatively, is that money? He's got a car and some money. He can go out and take his friends out and impress his friends, you know, buy a few clothes and, you know, a few gizmos and gadgets. Is that money compared to his father? Right? Does that make sense? Was that too extreme? Should I take it? You know, the father, he's working down at the docks, okay? And he makes a little bit of money, right? And, you know, and he gives a few bucks to his son as an allowance for the week or month. So is that money? You understand? It's money. Because it is. It's money, it has buying power. But we don't call it money. When we say someone has money, do we mean he's got $5 in his pocket for the month? No.
Money.
He's got money, yes. So when we say bhava, we mean they have bhava. Yeah, does that make sense? But when they have a little bit of bhava, we don't call it the state of bhava, but it's actually bhava that's worth functioning. You know, just like money is still functioning.
So can we also say that ruchi generates nishta?
Ruchi generates nishta.
Or
means bhava is generating nishta.
So,
in other words, the working principle here is bhava. Mm-hmm. That's what he's explaining, because we're discussing bhava. Mm-hmm. So bhava creates that shraddha. Mm-hmm. Bhava then mature, that shraddha, that bhava then, but that's immature. Then it matures. It's not the mature, it's maturing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like you can say a 12-year-old has matured,
yeah.
But he's not mature, right? Does that make sense? Because the 12-year-old notices things, right? The 8-year-old doesn't. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So nishta, it's mature. One starts to notice. Because one's fixed, there's not the distractions of all the material things. So one can notice actually devotional service. Does that make sense? In other words, you're doing whatever you're doing. Devotional service is there with the neophyte. So he's a devotee. But most of his attention is on something else. So the actual, what specialness is there in devotion? Like every day we have a kirtan.
Yes.
Right? Every day there's guys sitting there all day doing kirtan. Right? We've seen them, no?
Yeah.
They sit down there. Okay. Now, do we go and sit down with them?
No.
Good chance, no. But if I go, kirtan mela, then will we go sit down?
Yes.
Is it different? Right? The deities change at that time. The holy name takes on a whole different... It's the same thing, but the point is we have other things to do. You understand? But then if there's something special, then we do it. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the point, is that when it gets to nishta, then there's not so much distraction in the way of, you know, just whatever's going on around you. Right? In the way of just taking care of the body, family, you know, how you say, social, economic, all these kinds of things. So then one starts to notice the specialness of the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of Krishna, which is bhava. Right? That's the potency of bhava. Then, from that, one develops taste. Does that make sense? Right? So it's still bhava's acting, but now at this point, now we would say, now that preliminary of aspect of bhava, you would actually appreciate it as bhava.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah, okay.
It's because a couple of times I've been wondering why they use specifically the words. I remember one time earlier it said that it generated asakti. Where I was wondering, why exactly asakti and not bhava or prema or ruchi? I mean, why do you...
No, but it's bhava that's generating that.
Yeah, but this... Yeah, okay.
You understand?
Yeah, yeah.
In other words, bhava is the working principle. Mm-hmm. Just like you have a little money. Okay, he has $5. Okay, and, you know, he buys his lollipops or whatever he buys with it. Right? But then a little bit later, he gets $10 or, you know, $20. Right? But then instead of just buying his little candies, he invests that money. And now it starts. He starts to make some money, right? In other words, he buys a bunch of lollies cheap, you know, down at Costco's and sells them in the school, right? You know, and makes a profit, right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's different. You understand? Now it's generating something. But it's still the same principle. But the point is because it's gotten to the point that focus is there, then ruchi comes. Because, in other words, ruchi is that preliminary of bhava, means bhava as bhava, right? Because now if you say, now he's making money, that's the preliminary, that's what his dad does. But that's the preliminary of it. You understand that? You can actually say, is business. His father's rich because he has a business. But now he has a business. It's small, so it's just beginning, but it's the same principle. You don't really call it business. Right? You know, if it is, then generally you get called by the principal. Right? Because that's not supposed to be happening. Right? You know, like that, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the point is that stage is there where it's more like bhava, but it's not full. Does that make sense? You know, or the boys are, you know, there and, you know, they grab the girls' ponytails. Mm-hmm. Right? So you can say it's interacting, you know, like, you know, it's like, you know, just what you always wanted, to get a rock thrown at you. Every girl's dream, you know. Like Ken threw a rock at Barbie today. You know, wow. This is getting serious. You know. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But you wouldn't really call it a relationship.
Not really.
Yeah, like that. You know, maybe Neanderthal, you know, comes with a club, you know. Yeah. Ooh, the boys brought clubs today. What's going to happen? Yeah. So, you know what I'm saying? It's not, it's just preliminary.
Yes.
But it still has that same quality. But it's the appreciation of the name, form, qualities, and pastimes that you've developed Shraddha. It's because of that you like to be around the devotees. It's because of that you get more serious and take up the process. It's because of that, then the anartas are removed. It's because of that you become steady. Right? Because of that you get a taste. So the whole thing that's working throughout is bhava. It's that potency of bhava. Right? So bhava is more than just a state. It's actually what's making it run. Because it's the preliminary, it's the first stage of prema. I mean, in 10 stages of prema, rati is considered the preliminary, right? But then, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, actually, if there's only prema, then that is what, because when you say ananda, that technically means prema. But it can be in a neutral state, that's bhava, right? And then it can be a preliminary state, and that's down into ruchi and asakti. And then even more preliminary than that, just kind of, you know, just fundamental kind, then that goes down into Shraddha,
yeah.
Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's not mature there, it's mature at Nishta. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So it's, in other words, it's the potency of bhakti that can come down, because prema won't be coming at that level, because it's still neutral. You know what I'm saying? Because prema means fully committed.
Mm.
Bhava means that potential to commit, but hasn't quite, or hasn't committed to the point it's turned into prema. You know what I'm saying? The boy and the girl, they like each other, but when that element of commitment is there, then they're engaged. You understand? So it's different. You know, but even that's not completely. It's when they're married, then you can say, okay, that's it. Because at engagement, it can change. You know, or before engagement, it can change. So that's why, even though it's the same process, it still has different levels and different flavors. You know what I'm saying? The girls are talking, oh, that this boy, he's great, he's this and that. So what are the girls going to do? They want to know, how serious is it? What are they going to do? You wouldn't have a clue. Okay, they're going to look and see if there's a ring on her finger.
Okay.
If there's a ring, it's serious.
Okay, yeah.
You know?
Right.
If there's no ring, then it's okay. Well, it's kind of, you say it's serious, but where's the ring?
Yeah.
You understand?
Yeah.
Yeah, these are
interesting.
Yes. That's the problem. It's only interesting. That's the difficulty. Like, half the planet, it's like, oh, interesting. The other planet is, duh! You know? It's like, you know.
The ring's actually part of traditional Vedic culture?
No.
Okay.
I mean, there is if you're from Kerala. Because a wedding is just exchanging rings, exchanging garland. The whole ceremony is the two families go out. There's you know, always these famous trees in the locale. You know, banyan tree, people tree. You know, and they have nice seats under them. So, you know, everybody's all dressed up. So the boy and girl go sit there. And they either get out their rings or get out their garlands or get out both. And they exchange them. And then they all walk off and have lunch. That's it. That's a wedding.
Nice.
Yeah. The only problem is that being one of the, you know, lesser marriages, it doesn't give, you know, it's not great for children, but it means you can get them. It's not, you're not good quality like that. So that's why, you know, more work, better result. Yeah, you know, so.
It's like the Las Vegas drive-thru wedding.
Oh, yeah, car's just there, and as you get up to there, that's it. Yeah, I guess you have the pre-order counter, and then you have the actual delivery, you know, like that, too. You know, so.
Caste Brahmins, they go to Kerala to get married in like shotgun weddings.
Oh, yeah, but no, rings aren't specifically that. I mean, they wear rings, but they're not specific to the wedding. I think it's been for some time now, it's been integrated, but it's not an essential part. Rings are just our ornaments like that. The actual wedding is the symptom is generally like in South Bengal, then it's the Mangala Sutra, or the sindur is the actual point. You know. Like that.
Can you define Baba as you're using it within this context? It sounds like you're saying Baba is a seed. And is that different? Is it defined differently from the actual stage of Baba?
No, it means when that's more. It says here, the natural function of bhava is to independently reveal the transcendental form, identity, and pastimes of Sri Krishna. Bhava appears to be an emotion, a part of the human psyche, which it is not, and is apparently caused by a catalyst external to one's itself. However, bhava or rati constitutionally is a transcendental object of relishment bestowed upon the jiva and mercifully enables the souls imprisoned in the material world to relish the nectarian spiritual qualities of Krishna in his transcendental pastimes. So that's actually what is functioning. You know, in other words, from Shraddha to Prema, then it's Bhava that's actually acting. Then there's a stage where the manifestation of the appreciation of the name, form, qualities, and pastimes is so great that it's called Bhava. But Baba is actually more than just a state or an emotion. It's actually a potency of the Lord that's bestowed upon the jiva through which he can appreciate and understand. Right. That makes sense. So that's what's very nice about these discussions is they reveal a lot of technical things.
Normally it's just translated as emotion.
Yeah. Well, that's why he mentions here the point of that it's called that bhava and rati are treated as synonymous in the scriptures, like that, because so it's just because rati will take it as that budding love for Krishna. It's love, but it's a bud, just like the bud, you call it a flower, it's just an immature flower, you know. And bhava then will take it as a state of existence, generally that stage in the process, but it's more than that. It's actually the potency that reveals that taste for, reveals the name, form, qualities, and pastimes like that. So that's you know, even the newest devotee, when they develop Shraddha, that's because of that potency of bhava. That would also be in line with when, I think it's in, Srila Prabhupada's quoting Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, I think in the 8th verse of Upadeshamrita in the purport, where he's saying that when he's describing bhava, then they take the first three aspects of bhava, the Shravana Dasa, the Varna Dasa, and the Smarana Dasa, and take them all the way down to Shraddha, that you've heard about I'm servant of Krishna. And then you have to adjust with I'm a servant of Krishna rather than I'm enjoying the material world. And then from hearing about, you start to remember about Krishna. But we won't call that bhav sadhana as such, because it's not meant, but it's bhava that creates, that brings those three all the way down. So even when we're saying, these are the elements that are working, Right? So then, but then when that matures, then one's on that stage above where one actually has one's spiritual form, one's in that form. And then one's adjusting and being in that form. And then one's starting to remember Krishna more and more. So when that comes to the point of samadhi, then it goes into apandas, where one is able to therefore meet and interact directly with Radha and Krishna. Because before that you see them, you're serving them, but you don't personally directly interact. But at apandas then you can interact. Because right? That was the problem with the gopis that didn't go to the rasa dance. They weren't so absorbed in Krishna that they had burnt off any fragrances left from being in the material world. Right? So then, therefore, they weren't able to go. But once they did that, that's the stage of apandas. And then that apandas, by the association of the nitya siddhas, then you develop, it goes into prema. Right? So that's sampatidas, that's inheritance. Now you've inherited your position. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's like the son's living in the house. Right? And in the future it will be his house. It's in the will, but it's not his house yet. Because he hasn't developed the maturity to deal with it. Does that make sense? Okay.
So at what point, Rati, once the relationship with Krishna is revealed?
Yes. Rati and Bhava are the same. Okay. It means at the point of Brahma Bhuta. Brahma Bhuta is that point between the being unconditioned and being liberated. So if you're just liberated, it's called Mukti. But if you're liberated in devotional service, is called Brahma-bhuta. Like that. Though, the Maya bodies will also consider Brahma-bhuta the same thing, because it technically is. The liberated aspect is the same, just it lacks the devotion that the devotees have. Like that. So therefore, it's different. So the point of being at that stage of bhava is now different than being at that stage before. Because now, before, it wasn't, there's the neutral state, and there's Krishna, the taste of interacting with Krishna, and there's the taste of the reflection, just dealing with Krishna's energy. So one doesn't know, so here are the winners, right, But then once one goes to bhava, then one has given that up, so the focus is only on prema. So it's just a matter of that time before one comes to prema, like the nitya siddhas. That's the advantage. Okay, first Shraddha. Okay, in Vaidhi Bhakti, bhava is an unmanifest state known as Shraddha. First, Shraddha matures and becomes Nishta, steadfastness, which produces Ruchi, taste. In Raganuga Bhakti, however, Bhava generates Ruchi right from the beginning. Right? So those elements that you're naturally spontaneous about, that's actually Bhava's just generating it straight. It's not through the sadhana. Right? But it's generally not prominent. Like as we mentioned, the new Bhakta, and Prashad, there's a natural spontaneous attraction. Right? But it doesn't enter into anything else. His chanting, he's falling asleep. Bhagavatam, he's falling asleep. Even sometimes in the kirtan, he's falling asleep.
But not during prasad.
Huh? But not during prasad. That was the complaint. When I once asked, told the temple commander, says, I'm really tired, I'd like to take a nap. He says, but you're not falling asleep in prasad, so you're not that tired. No, so he had to agree, yeah. And then one day I was out on Sankirtan eating lunch, I fell asleep. Then I know now I'm tired. Okay? Yeah. So then you don't have to worry. You'll just fall asleep anyway. You don't have to make the separate attempt. But the funny part is because you're sitting up, you just fall, and then, just kind of wake up, keep eating and stuff like that. Then you look at the watch and, what? Like that, yeah.
Can you be, say, 50% Vaidhi and 50% Raganuga?
No, but why do you have to get, why 50-50?
I could have said 60-40. I don't know.
No, but the point is, it's not a matter of that, it's just a matter of what it is. you know, at the time of Prashad, you could probably say 100%, you know, rag and zero vaidhi, you know, like that. You know, it doesn't even eats with both hands. It doesn't matter. But Prabhu, you're supposed to take it out of the bucket and put it on your plate. Oh, sorry. Unless it's your personal bucket, then it's okay.
Or, on the other hand, that would make it my personal bucket. So.
Yeah, but then after a while, you'd have a lot of personal buckets. What would you do with all those personal buckets?
That's true.
Yeah. Okay. When bhava voluntarily evokes itself without waiting for the application of either vaidhi bhakti or raganuga bhakti, is defined either as Krishna prasadja bhava or Krishna bhakta prasadja bhava. Right, so either Krishna prasad or Krishna bhakta prasad. So by the grace of Krishna, by the grace of his devotee. Right, so in footnote 1, Srila Prabhupada explains the nectar devotion. Elevation to the stage of ecstasy can be possible in two ways. One way is constant association with pure devotees. The other way is by the special mercy of Krishna, or by the mercy of a pure devotee of Krishna. Elevation to the ecstatic stage of life is generally attained through association with pure devotees, while elevation to that stage by the special mercy of Krishna or his devotees is very rare. So saying the same thing. So he's pointing out is that he's saying the association of devotees. But the point is you're performing devotional activities in that association, because those activities of sadhana only have meaning in the association of devotees. Sadhana on one's own doesn't have a meaning. With the devotees, that has a meaning, right? Or under the direction of devotees. Right? So, therefore, even beyond that, just Krishna's mercy or the devotee's mercy, that's rare. The purport is that one should execute devotional service rigidly in the association of devotees so that there will be certainty in raising oneself to that ecstatic position. Right? So in other words, don't wait that, well, I'll get the mercy, but don't perform the sadhana properly. Right? So that's the point. The Prabhupada says if you do that in the association, then there's certainty of coming to bhava. Because the other way, you don't know. In other words, if you're doing that, then there's more chance you'd get the mercy anyway. Right? Of course, it's mercy that you're in the association of devotees, that bhava is there producing that enthusiasm within the devotional process. Right? And the devotional process itself, that's all that's mercy by the grace of the Lord and the devotees. But still, just to get that extra to kind of like jump over that.
Can you address this one point? In India, people always ask for blessings.
Mm-hmm.
And when they ask me, I always feel like it's a disempowering request. Like they're feeling like, I can't do this. Can you bless me so I can be successful? Almost like, I don't know if that's their mood or not. I sense that. Could you speak about that a little bit? What's good about it and what may not be good
about it? Okay. Means you have two aspects. One is, I can't do it, so someone has to help me. The other is understandings that we actually are helpless. Now, it's just a matter of whether we have confidence in the process or not. So someone with confidence has confidence in the process. Someone who lacks confidence doesn't have confidence in the process, right? Because the process means we take our position within the overall structure and make our endeavor, right? But it's actually, we're not the material cause. We're the only operational cause. So we can desire to take part in that operation, but the actual transformation of the material energy is done by the material energy itself, right? But we feel confident that we can take part as the operational cause. Now, if lack of confidence is, we think, I can't do that. I can't take part as the operational cause, right? And so therefore I won't get. So one could look at it as lack of confidence, or one could look at it, one actually understands that it's only by the grace of higher authority that you're able to actually take part in that. So they have the confidence to be able to do, but the point is they still need the blessings to do it right. Right, because like little kids, they have confidence to do things, but it doesn't necessarily go right. So they have to have direction. They have to have that blessings, because it's actually because more there, I would say, is they're looking more at, because what are they asking for? They're generally asking for blessings for the result. So there's a confidence, I can do this, I follow the process, but the result is up to the Supreme. So that's where the blessings comes in, because you can do the activity, But Krishna doesn't have to give the results. He gives the results, but he doesn't have to. You know, it's not like karma mimamsa, where I've done the work, I deserve the results. God has to give it. He's forced. Right? Means, in other words, karma is more powerful than God, right, in their estimation. But so here it's a matter of they're asking for blessings because they want the result. Right? So it means when they're asking for blessings that my son passes his exam, it's not that he does the exam nicely, it's that he gets the results. Does that make sense? So you have to look at it as where it is. So generally it's not a lack of confidence in the process, it's just that they know that results comes from higher authority. Right? So if you have an in with the higher authority, then they get, you know, blessings.
Sometimes it seems like the blessings they're asking are easily achieved if you just do the process, because
But still, the result, even the simple thing, you know, it's just like you say, you just pick up the food, put it in your mouth. But little kids pick up the food, it doesn't go in their mouth. Old men pick up the food, it doesn't go in their mouth. So there is that element of blessing there, even though they're both, you know, taking the hand, picking the stuff up, you know, going in the, you know, general trajectory of the mouth, but somehow or another it doesn't quite make it. Right? You know, the difference though being, you know, the little kids have other ways to absorb food while old men don't. So, you know.
Well, sometimes I'll say, please bless my son, that he'll do well on his exam.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking in my mind, if he just studies, he'll do well.
No, but the point is still, he has to get the results. So then, the point is it's the whole thing. So then that blessing that he'll, you know, that blessing is there, then he may take it more seriously, study, apply himself better, like this. So those kinds. Because the point is one is empowered with potency anyway. Right, that's the difficulty in the Western success elements, is that they're only looking at the mechanics. There's not and they think I'm doing it when they're just 1/10,000 the tip of the hair. They're the instrument in the process. I mean, you're observing what's the subject and what's the object and what's the verb, and you know, and what's the data, the result. But the point is they're only the instrument. But they place them as themselves as if they're the subject, but the instrument is assisting the subject. But at the same time, according to the need or wish or desire of the object. So that's why only if you have both of those at once, you're successful. You know, but if you're thinking of the result, that's neither of those. Right? Because the subject and the object are two cases. Dative is a separate case. Right? So if you're looking at those two, you're not looking at the dative of getting the result. You're looking at how this verb is being applied properly to the two nouns on each side of it. I'm trying to connect two nouns to the verb. So, is that working? Is the effort of the subject being applied properly to the nature of the object? That's what the instrument's doing. Right? So that's actually the position. So it's faulty in the Western that they take it that I am the subject. And they think the object is the dative. That's why most fail. They think the object is the result. No, the object is where you're applying your effort. The result is separate from that. Like that. So people who are successful either know this consciously or intuitively know this. And the ones who fail, they don't know this.
It seems sometimes experienced that they think that my blessing is the verb. Like the Christians, that they don't have to do an effort if I just give them some blessings.
So yeah. That's the problem with that. It's what he's talking about. Then there's no effort.
Yeah.
So then you get the problem where the secular person will be saying the other one is, you know, lazy and, you know, just working on faith and it's not practical. But the point is you need the blessing in the practical application, because otherwise so many people have done things and it you know, you don't know how it's going to turn out. You know, like a war, you can have a party that's much bigger and stronger and everything, but the smaller party wins, right? I mean, you have David and Goliath, right? You know, one guy's very big and the other guy, he's got a rock, you know, and that's it, you know, but he won, you know. So it's not an uncommon thing. You know, what was it? Achilles, he's a little dinky guy. You know, like everybody else, and this big monster guy. You know, but he's got a better strategy.
Isn't it battle at Gettysburg or something in the American Civil War?
Yeah, or you just take a bunch of tea boxes and throw them in the ocean. You know, I mean, that didn't take much brains or much, you know, no. What I'm saying, you get, you know, but it worked. You know, so you have all these things that it's not, so therefore there's the element of the blessings. Because the point is, blessings means piety, means good result. Lack of blessings means impiety. So it's part of the equation, but if you take it, that it's the only equation. Now he has the blessings, so he doesn't have to work. Then that's stupid. No, blessings is one part of it. You have to have the proper identity and have the confidence. You have to have the proper plan and make the effort in that plan. Then you have to depend upon the Lord for the result.
Is there any reaction to the blessing giver?
Of course.
So if you give blessings to someone who doesn't really take it seriously, or...
Means what is getting in the way of the blessing working?
Their lack of endeavor.
And why would there be a lack of endeavor?
Because they don't take it seriously.
And why wouldn't they take it seriously?
Because they think the blessing is doing the job for them.
Okay, but what would that be? That would be a lack of?
Faith.
And a lack of?
Knowledge.
Knowledge, okay.
Okay, good.
Yeah, okay. But why? But the point is knowledge, a lack of it is a symptom of one thing, and having it is symptom of another. You know what I'm saying? In other words, having good results, having knowledge, having good birth, education, you know, good legal standing, what is that symptomatic of?
Piety.
And what is lack of it symptomatic of?
Impiety.
Okay, so now the reason not successful is because there's some impiety blocking it. Yeah. Where does that go?
To me.
Yes.
Okay. So it's completely fair to say, or you can't give you blessings.
The point is why give blessings on a material platform? That's not the business of a sadhu. Spiritual platform, yes, then this has some value. On the material platform, it's like, you know, like Prabhu's saying, do the work and, you know, let's get on with it.
Exactly.
You know. But the point is, but ultimately it actually is there from that. Because before us, the material situation and spiritual life were non-different. Right? In other words, you're practicing spiritual life in your whatever material situation you're in. So therefore, blessings meant that blessings to properly engage everything and get over the obstacles to be Krishna conscious. But with time, then they become separated. Right? So the process stays the same of getting higher blessings, but now instead of for engaging it in the Lord's service, now it's just to get it.
Supplied,
yeah. So it's, in other words, you're getting blessings for a situation. Right? Have money, exam, you know, get the social position, get over some trouble. It's not actually for a process of elevation. Right? Because that's the material. You want to enjoy the situation. So they want to create a nice situation. So people are working hard to create a nice situation, so they want blessings to do that. But you get it by work, right? Means result means you've done the work. The work means you have the proper knowledge and understanding and attitude, right? So, and then you get the result, it becomes part of the field. Right? Does that make sense? So it starts your process. Right, so that's why you start small. Anything that you get results from, then you get that confidence. Right, if you try to do something too big, it doesn't work. Right, you have to build up. So then, yeah.
So if someone asked you, please give me blessings so I get this job, which someone asked me last week, what would you say?
So, you know, you just kind of deflect it into something to do with Krishna. Yeah. Yes, I mean, it is a difference, but at the same time is that that's only a factor in the overall spiritual development, because the point is, as we said, these are only facilities. Facilities are generated by occupation, right? So, but the point is, it's the lifestyle that has to be included. The lifestyle element has to be the point. So, you know, the blessings, may we be successful in spiritual life, or this or that. Like the questions of the residents of Kaliningram. They want to know, because they know devotional service is dependent upon performing sadhana bhakti in the association of devotees. How do we identify a devotee? Right. So then those things are there. Because the point is if we're successful spiritually, then that means inherently to some degree, then economically things are going on. Because even if economically they do go on, doesn't mean spiritual works. You know what I'm saying? You see, many devotees, before they had money, they were doing better spiritually than after they had money. Right? You know, it's, so therefore, what's the use of that blessing just on its own? You know, it's like a, you know, because it's what you, that's like getting blessings that, you know, at lunch I'll get a, you know, spoon and a fork, you know, then I'll be successful. But the point is no, until you, you know, pick up stuff and put it in your mouth and swallow, right, you know, chew in between, of course, like that, then you're not going to be successful, right? So that's the point, is we just want these facilities for being successful, but it's not actually looking at what is actually successful. That's the mistake.
So it's actually a nice preaching platform when people come and ask us for blessings.
Means you can take it into something.
Take it
else.
And connect it to Krishna.
You know, as long as you can. But sometimes they just walk up to you, never, you know, just right there on the road, and, you know, bless, you know, babies. That's a popular one. Like that. Those ones are easier, right? Yeah, just deflect it into, it's like the point is that. You know, you just say human life is meant for spiritual realization, and so therefore, you know, these things are simply to support that. So if you're focused on spiritual life, then why, you know, then the facility necessary for that will be there. But the point is it's non-committal, because you can become very Krishna conscious by having nothing, you know. But they'll, by the wording, they'll get the idea that. You know. In other words, you know, put non-committalness into the form of what sounds like blessing, because it is spiritually, but on the material platform, it's not. Is that okay?
You mentioned attitude as one of the elements of success. So, could you give an example of everything is lined up, the field, the relationship, the process, the goal, everything is right. What would be the wrong attitude? What do you mean by attitude?
That's circumstance. Because time and place has been arranged with circumstance. That's the right attitude. Means he's too proud, it won't work. You know, or not focusing on the right aspects, you know, so the anxiety is there, like that, or the intensity is too great for the situation, you know. Or it's not enough. You know, so many elements can come up like that. Because, in other words, the mechanics is there, but you still have to, as we said, apply the mechanics for what it is you're trying to accomplish, but according to the nature of what you're trying to accomplish it on. Does that make sense? Like you're trying to make, let's say, your airplane. But the point is you're dealing with, you know, glue and plastic or paper or wires or string. So according to that, you can pull more on string, but you can't pull more on wire, but not as much on string. Or plastic will be stronger than paper. So it's not just, you take the stuff, you glue it together, and then you got a plane. But it's according to what the medium is of that plane. You know, and what size it is and how much it has to do, right? You know, if it's a little model plane, then you have to be very delicate. You might be using tweezers or something. If you're the Wright brothers, then you're using a hammer, you know. Does that make sense?
A lot of people get to the top because they're proud. So they get there.
But they won't stay there.
Yeah.
The point is they may get there. All it is that they have more confidence. So that's why they can do. But they won't stay there because they have to be able to work with others.
Okay. There's a book called by a Buddhist. He's a consultant, but he's Buddhist. And it's called What Got You There Won't Keep You There.
Okay, yeah, yeah. That's good. That's good. That's good. Jai Ho. Arriba. Arriba. Made it back. Okay.
Alive?
Yes. Okay, very good. Good to see you. Yeah, it won't. Because it's what means in other words, what it took to cook the lunch isn't what it's going to take to, it's not the same attitude or same technique's not going to be what serves the lunch or what eats the lunch or what cleans up after the lunch or what made arrangements before the cooking. You know, your total mode of passion, grab this, that, so many things. You can't do that when you go into the store to buy the ingredients. You can't do that when you're serving. You can't do that when you're eating. Right? But if you're a little wild and passionate in the kitchen, no one minds. They'll say, oh, very enthusiastic. But if you do that at any of the other stages, they'll say, something's wrong with this guy. You know? Like that. So that's the thing. This mood is the third aspect of the verb. They only look at the first two. Time and place. You know? So the mood is there. So if the thing has confidence, means that confidence is applied with intelligence. Because it's not just that he had ego, he had knowledge and endeavor. Because just ego doesn't do anything either. Right? As we mentioned, there was that one South American joke that they're talking from one country to another. You know, the one friend is telling the other friend, I've worked out a great business. Like that. I'll make so much profit. And the other friend's saying, how? He says, I'm going to purchase this guy from this country at what he's actually worth, but I'm going to sell him for what he thinks he's worth. The profit margin's huge. Yeah. Like that. So. Yeah. So attitude isn't enough. So that's the problem, is because the guy takes that, of course, any idiot understands you have to have knowledge of the field and they have a plan. But if you don't have confidence, you can't do it. So they'll only speak about confidence in their seminar. But they're taking the other two for granted. Right? You know what I'm saying? But, you know, the other groups will know it's all about the plan and knowledge. You know? Like that. The others, it's all, you know, so each one's going to be different. I mean, of course, we have all that, but we're so fixed in just arranging the plan and that, you forget that you have to apply it at the goal. You know what I'm saying? So in this way, then, they take some aspect that they just, that, of course, that's obvious. This is the part that's missing, which is because that was the part that was missing in the application in their life. That's all. They're successful means they used the plan that was applied. Right? And they were focusing on it in the present. They'll be successful. But the point is that all these other elements are required. Does that make sense? Okay. The purport, okay, by the so elevation to that stage by the special mercy of Krishna as devotee is very rare. The purport is that one should execute devotional service rigidly in the association of the devotees, so that there will be certainty in raising oneself to that ecstatic position. In special cases, of course, there's a special favor from Krishna, and although we should always expect that, we should not sit idly and simply wait for Krishna's special mercy. In other words, we're always expecting Krishna's mercy and desiring that, but we're not waiting that, that'll be enough. We're rigidly executing devotional service in the association of devotees, right? So in other words, you know, why depend upon one, right? Work with both. That means that one's more enthusiastic. The goal is more important. Develop love for Krishna is more important. It is just as when sometimes it is found that a person who never attended school or college may be recognized as a great scholar, or an honorary degree from great universes may be offered to him. But this does not mean that one should avoid school and expect to automatically receive an honorary degree from some university. Right? Because it wasn't just he got the, he made the endeavor. Right? But his endeavor may not have been exactly in the normal way. It means the study of the subject, the application of the subject is, but it may not have been through that same technique. So you can't say that we won't. So the guy just sits there, he's not going to get a degree. The guy who's active, he'll get the degree. Mm-hmm. But since you're active, why not be active, as mentioned before, following the process given by the acharyas. Mm-hmm. Right? That path given by the acharyas is the sure method. Right? Similarly, one should devoutly execute the regulative principles of devotional service and at the same time hope for Krishna's favor or for his devotee's favor. Right? So both of them are there. So that makes it practical. But in here, just as we're always when we're going through, they're each being discussed separately so that you get a clear understanding. But then in application, they're together. Right, just like karma, jnana, and yoga are discussed separately so you clearly understand them. But they're used together. Does that make sense? So they're not separate. Brajanath. How may Krishna Prasad Jabhava be described? Raghunathas Babaji. Krishna Prasad, Krishna's mercy is of three types. Vachika, by words, Aloka Dhana, by granting vision, and Harda, by grace manifest in the heart. Examples showing that Krishna gives all three types of mercy are found in the scriptures. In Vachika, Krishna simply promises the devotee by his words, and immediately the all-blessing crest jewel embodiment of divine bliss and transcendental willful bhakti that only seeks to serve Krishna awakens his bhava within the devotee's heart. An example of Aloka Dhana, like Krishna says, in the Gita at the end, he's giving his word. The one who studies this, and teaches devotees who, applies this in his life, then he'll be successful. That's Vachika. But because he was worried earlier, that people will say, well, he's too clever, right? Krishna is very clever. If Ram said, I say this, then everyone would go, yes. But if Krishna says it, then they would go, is this another trick? Right? So therefore, Krishna tells Arjuna, you pronounce it. Because if the devotee says it, then they'll know it's serious. But the point is it's still Krishna saying it, that the devotee should say it. An example of Aloka Dhana Kripa is the mercy given to the sages of Dandakaranya Forest, who had never seen the Supreme Lord previously. Yet as soon as they beheld the Lord Sri Ram, their hearts were flooded with bhava, and bhava and bhakti simply by the mercy of the Lord. Bhava that spontaneously sprouts within the heart, as in the case of Srila Sukadeva Goswami, is a result of Harda Kripa, the causeless mercy of the Lord, right? Because Krishna came and convinced him, right? Because he's a Brahmavati. He's sitting in the womb, how he got there, he's not really caring, and that he's going has to leave, he doesn't really care about that either, right? Because it's all Brahman, so inside, outside doesn't matter. So he's quite happy there, right? So then 16 years have gone by, and so then Krishna comes and tells him about it and this and that. Then within the heart, then it's revealed about the bhakti. So now he's moved from mukti into bhava, right? So then now there's something worth, So now, Brajanath, kindly describe the Krishna bhakta prasadja bhava. Right, so that was Krishna's mercy. Raghunathas Babaji. Dhruva Maharaj, Pralad Maharaj, and many others received the mercy of the great devotee, Srila Narad Muni, which filled their hearts with bhava, finally elevating them to become crest jewels among the devotees of the Lord. By the mercy of Srila Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, and other eternal associates of the Lord, innumerable persons have been inspired to engage in Shuddha Bhakti. Vijaya, what are the symptoms of bhavodaya, the awakening of bhakti? Right? So then the devotee gives that blessing, then it's there, but still one has to apply it. Like you see so many times, devotees, earlier days, and there's cases, devotees have been a devotee for 3 months, and they go on their own and open a center in some place where that no devotees are, no facilities, no nothing. He has no money, he has no place, nothing. He just goes there. You know, find some place to stay, starts doing preaching, you know, get some attention and this and that, get some devotees, sell some books, then starts to rent a place, and he's got a temple. And it would become a temple also within a few months, right? It means Mukunda Maharshi, he became a devotee in New York. He went to San Francisco, he had some connection there. Then they invited Prabhupada later there. That was, so 66, it started in New York, 67 he invites them. So it's within a year, but I don't think it was a year he was there. But when Prabhupada comes, there's 50 devotees. You know what I'm saying? So this has to be some special mercy, the mercy of the devotee. Is that Vijaya, what are the symptoms of bhavodaya, the awakening of bhava? Raghunath Das Babaji, anubhavas are emotions that act as precursors, ultimately evoking bhava. They are 9 in number. Shanti, tolerance. Avyarta, kalatva, the feeling that an engagement outside of the service of Krishna is a waste of time. Virakti, detachment. Manashunyata, pridelessness. Asha banda, constant hopefulness. Samutkanta, enthusiasm. Sarva namagane ruchi, constant relishing of Harinam and glorification of Sri Krishna. Krishna gunakhyane ashaktis, eagerness to hear about the qualities of Sri Krishna. And Krishna vasati stale priti, loving and honoring those places connected with Sri Krishna. Right. So all these anubhavas, then these are precursors to the awakening of bhava. So if these continue and intensify, then naturally bhava's there, right? Because bhava is still bestowed, so you have the right attitude, then it's bestowed.
Can I ask a question on the point before? You give the example of Mukunda Maharaj. When Prabhupada left, we all felt something like some mercy wasn't there. One of the disciples of Prabhupada's godbrother said that Prabhupada was always praying for us, therefore it was very easy for us to do these things. And after he left, that was gone. Which, philosophically, I never heard that before. Experientially, that's what it felt like, at least at that point. Could you talk about the kripa of whether they're present, not present?
It means that blessing is always there. But when that still there's something special about that personal blessing, because relationship, direct relation, that interaction is part of the process. So that's the specialness of Vapu, is that one's getting a special mercy just by being around. But if one follows the instructions, then one always gets the blessings from that. So the blessings is always there to follow the instructions, but that means is that the one, but the other one then when you're actually you personally getting that. You know, so it's something more like that. Does that make sense? Because the one, I'm following the instruction, therefore you get the blessings. The other, you can just see the attitude, and so therefore. Does that make some sense? Like that. But it's always, that element is always there. One can always take advantage of it. Like Prabhupada said, he felt his spiritual master is always sitting next to him. Right? So then that's there, then you do everything, see everything that way. If you see like that, then it's always working. So the blessings are always there. Like that. Does that make sense? Because there's that attitude of just being conscious. That's why there is something special about that direct association. But at the same time, is the most important thing to gain in that direct association is the instructions. Does that work? Okay. A situation wherein a person exercises tolerance, although he would have every reason to become perturbed and agitated, is known as shanti. Right? In other words, tolerance, when it's a situation that would be a reason to get disturbed. like when we say amaniya manadena, is that you don't aren't looking for respect even in a situation where you should be. You know what I'm saying? Because it's easy when it's not a situation to be respected and to be humble, right? You know, or it's very easy to give respect when it's a very formal situation that's obvious. But, you know, in situations it's not obvious to be respectful, and where you should get respect but you don't, to be tolerant, that's then the... Another name is shama, compassion, forgiveness, and peacefulness. Right? So in other words, if there's compassion, forgiveness, peacefulness, there's tolerance. Right? So that's why Lord Chaitanya's mission is compassion, it's the audarya. Then within that, then... humility, tolerance, respect. These are sub-things of it.
Is the tolerance there because a person's fixed in their real identity?
Real identity meaning?
Like a servant of Krishna.
Yes, yes. Because if you're servant of Krishna, then the point is that compassion is there based on the spiritual platform, that they're also servant of Krishna. So therefore there's forgiveness, there's peacefulness. Because point is, whatever's going wrong, it's not actually affecting you. It's affecting the body. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's affecting the body. But we tend to think of it as, you know, it means, in other words, what's the bodily relationship, that's what we're gained on. But here is that you're working beyond that onto the relationship of the soul. You know, it's like you have that, you know, how you say that, you know, you have like the in Mahabharata, the Stri Parva. So at one point then all the, you know, the queens and all that, the wives of the soldiers, they come out onto the battlefield, you know, and they're sitting with their husbands, you know, they're dead, right? But they're, you know, explain, you know, telling, you know, all different things and pious things, and if they had been more pious this wouldn't have happened, you know, it's because of their, you know, that desire for more, the greed, that they're for now they're in the situation, you know, going on and on like this. But the point is they're talking to the body. The body's dead. But the point is who are they actually talking to, right? To the soul, who's not there. But the point is they're married to the body. It means their body's married to the body, but the actual relationship is on the platform of the soul. But that's just as soul to soul, as devotees. Right, so that's why the companionship is the most important element. So companionship you can have with anybody. That friendship you can have with anybody. But specific details of that will be according to the bodily relationship and the time, place, and circumstance. Does that make sense? So that's why these two have to function at once. Is the relationship of the two souls in service to Krishna, but that's expressed through the medium of the bodies in their interaction. You know, what would be the natural duties and interaction in those bodies? You know what I'm saying? Because that's where the problem comes, is that someone says it's my rights. But the rights of who? The body or the soul? The soul doesn't belong here, so there's no rights here. Right? So the rights of the body. But the body has a nature. That nature is part of the material creation. So we're only part of the material creation. So our rights are as much as what is our position in that creation. You know, like the little fingernail is standing up and saying, my rights. But he only has rights in connection with the whole body. He can't have rights separate from the body. Right? The only thing that's independent of the body is the soul. So they're even mixing up there. Whose rights is it? No, we're not this body, Prabhu. Yeah, that's the soul. But if we're not this body, who cares about the material rights? And if we care about the material rights, that's the body, and then there's rules. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is we're not telling the difference, therefore it doesn't work right. Make sense?
Yeah.
When a person is fully engaged in serving the Supreme Lord, wishing to avoid wasting time on non-devotional activities, it is called avyarta kalatva, vikranti, is defined as the spontaneous feeling of distaste for objects of sense gratification. I guess kala is kala is time, no? Yeah. So avyarta means what's not of material, because of material, you know, vyadis, all these different things are things of the world. So when one doesn't have time for material activities, pride is fueled by one's noble caste and creed, high social status, wealth, strength, beauty, power, etc. Right? Fun part is that, you know, we'll consider one bad. Oh, this noble caste and on the body a creed, but high social status, wealth, strength, beauty is fine.
Yeah.
Right? It means you're born in this family, therefore you have a certain credibility. Oh, that's bogus. But your personal beauty, now that's okay, but you got that by birth. Why is it the one thing of birth is wrong, but the other thing of birth is okay? So if they want to drop the birth, then you have to drop the whole thing. So then it's by your endeavor, it's by, you know. So in other words, when one is given up pride of these things, therefore a person who possesses all these attributes and remains prideless is actually mana shunyata. Right? Means if you have no money and it's like, ah, we don't care for money, you know, then, you know, don't use that one. You may not care for money, but that's between you and money. Right? But socially, use the one that you have. Does that make sense? Otherwise, it doesn't look proper, because otherwise when he gets money, then let's see what he says. That's why the Goswamis are special. They're born in the highest grade Brahmin families, in the highest groups within those. Right? You know, Gaur Saraswat Brahmins, Bharadwaj Shaka, you don't get much, Bharadwaj Gotra, you don't get much higher than that. That's just like, that's top. You mention that to any Brahmin, they'll, ooh, okay. Right? You know? So, that's special. Like that. Wealth. One is the treasure of the king. Right? And he's got just a personal, he's put aside one boat of gold coins. One boatload. Right? And the rule is he put aside one quarter. So that means he had four boatloads of coins. You know, we're not even talking, most people get excited, we're talking bucket loads. Or, you know, here, this is boatloads of money, right? And so that's how wealthy he was, the social prestige. Sanatana Goswami knew so many languages. If he wanted to discuss Bhagavatam, he's not sitting with one pandit, he's sitting with 30. Because 30 pandits, then they'll come up with something to say. Right? You know, it's constant, you know, otherwise it's a lot of reading. But there's something to discuss. 30 pandits. Right? He's smart. Means Sanatana Goswami, how he got chosen. You know this story? To be the prime minister. Was that the king, he had made this tower. Special tower. Very difficult to make. Right? But it was done by these special mysteries. And so then, when the Nawab, he was taken up into the tower and shown the sights from the top, you know, this minaret, then then the Nawab was impressed by the workmanship and all that, but the guy's attitude was so bad. He was so proud, because there's no one in that area could do stuff like this. You know, I guess he's so proud, he's expecting so much, he's this, he's that, he's just going on and on, that it annoyed the Nawab so much that he just pushed him off the minaret. Right? But the problem is there was supposed to be more of these minarets, right? Minarets come in four, right? They don't, or at least two, they don't, you know, I mean, there you do have single minarets, you know, that one in Delhi. But it may have been the same problem. There were supposed to be two of them, but they only made one. And so now it's just the one, you know, one minaret, yeah, whatever. So there was supposed to be more of this construction. And then, so the Nawab was upset. Now he needs a new mystery, right? And so he turns, the servant is there, and he just says the name of the village. Go to this village, right? And he was going to say, go to this village and get a mystery, right? The servant doesn't know what's going on. So all he hears, all he's seen is, The Nawab's upset. He already pushed this guy over the railing. And he told me, go to here. I'm going now. So he didn't even hear the other half of the sentence. He just ran off, right? The Nawab's thinking, oh, my God. So then the guy comes to that village. And it happens that Ramakeli happened to be the village where Sanatana Goswami is. And so this guy is there, you know, because he's just a servant. He's there. He's wandering up and down the main place. He doesn't know, looks bewildered, doesn't know what he wants. And then he's so much in anxiety because now he's gone there, but he doesn't know why he's there. So Sanatana Goswami, he's able to perceive this guy's in anxiety. He's not from here. He's in anxiety. He's, you know, got, you know, the dress of someone who's in the royal service. So he walks over to him and says, what's your problem? It appears you're in anxiety. And he says, I really don't know, because all I know is that the Nawab, he was, you know, in this minaret, he was upset, and he told me to go to come here. And then he thought, well, the only thing means, okay, this Nawab, you know, he's likes nice stuff, and the only thing of Ramakeli that would be of interest to the Nawab is we have these special mysteries that can do this special kind of work. So he thought, okay, come with me. And he arranged to contact that particular mystery. And so then the guy took him back, you know, to Nawab. Nawab was very happy, but it was kind of like, you're an idiot. You know, I only told you half a sentence. How did you bring this guy? It's not possible. You know? So then he explained, no, but I met this one person, and he saw I was in anxiety, and he simply asked what was told. Go to Ramakeli. You know, right? And so he immediately knew what you wanted. That makes sense. So that's how. So he sent for Sanatana Goswami, and offered him to be the prime minister. Okay. So now we're talking about how smart our Goswamis are, right? But now we know their birth. You're not going to get better than that on the planet, right? You know, and the wealth. You're not going to get better than that, right? Their intelligence. You're not going to get better than that, right? And we don't hear that they were bad looking.
We hear they were good looking.
That I'm not sure, generally because we talk about them afterwards, so that's not part of the scene. But the point is, you know, the Nawab most likely would not have ugly people in his court, right? That was the problem. Now, really smart was Chanakya. But now how did it come that he overthrew the king? Because when he was having this conference of Brahmins, and they were trying to work out something, and all that, no one could figure it out. And so Chanakya said, but it's this. So he's impressed by his knowledge and, you know, what he is. But when he looked at him, he was really ugly. I mean, I guess terminally ugly, right? You know, deformed, something that the king just felt it was an offense that he was even in his court, right? So he made a comment. Right? And then Chanakya, because, you know, he is Arthashastra Prasanna, he knows how all the architecture, how the palace works, everything. And so, you know, he said some comment to the king, you're not qualified to be the king if this is your consideration. Knowledge is higher than, you know, beauty is, you know, way down there on the list of what it is. You know, even for a Shudra, fame is more important. You know, if he's famous, then it's good. If he's just beautiful but nobody knows, what does it matter, right? I mean, there, if you look at it, how many people are celebrities and what their beauty is, right? There's so many people that are that beautiful without makeup, right? But they're not famous. No one knows. So, you understand? So, therefore, it's a lesser quality. So to base it on that, on a Brahminical thing, on such a low-end aspect of that, you're not qualified to be king. So the king either got insulted, you know, grab him, but he's already gone because he knows how to escape the palace. And so then he started a whole regime that took him 8 years to unseat him, and it's replaced him with a qualified king. Right? In other words, if he's unqualified, you don't unseat him first, then look around, you know, who can do this. No, you create the replacement, then unseat. That's Arthashastra. Right? The other one's just, you know, emotional. Looks like you're doing something, right? But you're not actually doing anything. Does that make sense? So what we're looking here. So the point is that the kings on this, they kind of like having good, the courtesans look good, right? Does that make sense? Because even if they don't say anything nice, at least they're not a problem to look at. You know what I'm saying? You've got to look at this whole ocean of, you know, courtiers. You know, so then if they don't look nice, then, you know, it's a problem.
Reminded of the problem.
Yeah, okay. Does that make sense? So here it is. What is it? Okay, noble caste, creed, high social status, wealth, strength, beauty, power. So they had all these kind of things, right? So he is the prime minister of a country, and one of the biggest countries, you know, in India at the time, because Bengal at that time would have been East and West Bengal, right? Part of Orissa, and, you know, Assam and all that going that way, until you get to, like, Manipur. So that's Bengal. That's huge. And population over here is much greater than any other place in India. Right? There's 100, I mean, I don't know what it is now, but the last census, there's 100 million in Bengal.
Yeah,
only.
West Bengal.
In West Bengal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you have East Bengal.
That's 140.
Huh?
Yeah, 140, I think.
It is now.
In Bangladesh.
Oh, in Bangladesh. So that would have been 240 at that time. And India at that time of the census, I think, was 600 or 700 million. So that was 1/3 of the population of India. So it's huge. It's a big. So even that they're that, it's not little king. You know, this is big king. You know, like that. So their position, their power, like that, is great. They gave all that up to just, you know, sit under trees in Vrindavan to serve Lord Chaitanya, right? So that is, you know, being freed from this pride. Right? So they're so they're actually mana shunya. Right?
Yeah.
That's the Ashabandha means to be convinced that Sri Krishna will surely shower his mercy someday, and to continue to serve and meditate upon him with such a conviction, right? So continue to serve, not sit back, you know. But continue to serve with the idea, because it's Krishna's mercy anyway. But there's this mercy that he's giving because you're doing nicely, but then there's that mercy just because he feels like it, because he likes the mood. Right? To muster enthusiastically all means to acquire one's coveted object is called samukanta. Right, so enthusiastic, all means to acquire one's coveted object. So by that's what it's mean by hook or by crook. You get, you know, bhakti. So by whatever means you can do, whatever opportunity is there to serve, you take it. Right? You use your intelligence, you make it happen, you make it expand. So this aspect is there. Right? So that's enthusiasm. Sarva Nama Gane Ruchi means the constant taste for chanting Hari Nam. When a devotee fully comprehends that all of these various limbs of devotional practice, of all the devotional practice, chanting Hari Nam is the most effective, he engages his entire time in chanting with great Shraddha. Ruchi for chanting is the prime cause for the topmost spiritual success, right? Because you're going, that'll bring you to bhava, and that will bring you to prema. So that taste for the name is the primary, prime cause, okay? Okay. Krishna guna kyane asaktis. The more a devotee hears or speaks about the wonderful qualities and pastimes of Krishna, the more he becomes attracted to them. He is never satiated, and his attachment for hearing these wonders continues to expand. And so not only is he hearing, but he wants to continue that. He's never satiated. You know, it's not that he chants a lot, you know, but then, you know, he's finished. You know, but he always wants it to go on. Yes.
This chanting is like
on the beads and kirtan, whatever. In other words, one is always chanting. You know, even without beads and that, you're washing dishes, you can still chant. Like that. Of course, there's the shower. That's, of course, that's a given. You know, that. Krishna Vasati Stale Priti means to love and honor the dhams where the Lord performed his pastimes. While circumambulating the Dham, a devotee may inquire from the devotees in residence, "O residents of the Dham, where is the birthplace of the Lord? Where did Mahaprabhu dance in ecstatic kirtan? Where would Krishna follow with the gopas during his forenoon Purvahana Leela?" The pilgrim is answered by the residents, "Here is Mayapur. That raised area adorned by many tulsi plants is the yoga peat where the Lord appeared. See these villages, Ganga Nagar, Shimulia, Gadagachi, Majdia. They are some of the places where Mahaprabhu led his first Sankirtan processions." As he hears the time-honored glories of the Dhams mixed with the prema from the lips of a resident of the Dham, the devotee feels divine ambrosia filling his ears that sends him into an ecstatic trance. He sheds profuse tears with his hair standing on end whilst immersed in ecstasy of Baba. So that means that one interest in the Dham, one's absorbed in the Dham, wants to know about the Dham and everything like that. Brajanath, when such a flow of ecstatic emotion is inspired, are we to conclude that Rati for Krishna is within the devotee? Raghavan Das Babaji, not necessarily. The independent, spontaneous effusion of feelings within the heart for Krishna is Rati, transcendental loving attachment. However, shedding tears in such emotions can be inspired by other conditions, which are not necessarily Rati. Okay, footnote 2. Not for that time. Yeah, no, I think we'll leave that for this evening. So in other words, he's pointing out is that one may have all these feelings, and that it may be Rati, but it's also other conditions can inspire that. So then, you know, what are these other conditions? Right.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki
Jai
Jai Nitai Gaura
Hare Krishna.
I'm not sure who told me that one. Forget who mentioned it. Might have been Yakuni Maharaj. Him or Shiva Amaj. It would have been him or Shiva Amaj. They generally are very well knowledgeable in the past.
Is there a story of how Rupa Goswami tagged along with
him? I think, yeah, he may have been joined after that.